We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on bluechipspeakersnava.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker, and we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too. I must have this thing. And Tim is going to introduce our speaker tonight.
Thank you, Jackie. Well, this is a great privilege. We had a speaker scheduled with 34 years sobriety, and we thought we couldn't lose with that. I ran into Gus, and it had been a little while, and he let me know that his sobriety date was November 20th, 2012. Actually, Tinsley run into him here in Atlanta about 4 days before I spoke with him. 30 minutes after I got off the phone rang and my previously scheduled speaker canceled. He'd gotten a phone call within 5 minutes of me speaking with Gus, and he was called out of town. I talked to my sponsor, and he said, you know, we need somebody that's got a real raw, gritty story. Somebody that the newcomer can relate to. And that's Gus. Come on up here, Gus.
My name is Gus. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date, like Tim said, is November 20th of 2012. I have a home group. It's Happy Hour Group in Athens, Georgia. I have a sponsor that was, has a sponsor, and I also sponsor other men as well. Basically, I was born and raised in New York City. My parents come from Columbia, South America. While growing up in New York City, it was pretty rough because huge culture change. You know, it's people from all over the walks of life, and you know, when I went to school, it was just crazy. You know, it was just a bunch of kids running around rampant, and you know, and I was kind of feeling different. You know, in the neighborhood I grew up, which is Woodside, Queens, it was pretty much at the time was Italian and Irish, and so it was. I felt like a little out of place. But, you know, it didn't take long for me to start making friends, and we would terrorize teachers and destroy all kind of stuff, and, you know, and that's how we lived our lives, and we pretty much grew up together. And when I got into high school, things got really, really bad. I know that I was really acting out, and then my freshman year, when I was about 16, that was the first time I had a drink, and I drank alcoholically. You know, that night I drank to oblivion, and I puked all over myself, landed face down in a plate of spaghetti, and I couldn't wait to do it again. So basically, I chased that effect for 17 years. You know, I got involved in gangs when I was in New York, not too proud of the things that we did back then, and, you know, we lived crazy lives, you know. I'm not going to get too much into a war story because we all have one, you know, and I don't get into drunkalogs. Basically, I'm here to carry my experience, strength, and hope with all you guys. And if anybody's new, you know, welcome. I know this was the only place that would let me come back because growing up in an Irish neighborhood, there was a lot of pubs, and I raised hell all the time, and I was constantly getting kicked out of pubs. And that's rough because, you know, in an Irish neighborhood, to get kicked out of pubs, you must be doing something really crazy. So, you know, to me, it snowballed. I started off from 1 Street. All the pubs started at 39th Street all the way down to like 80-something, and I had been banned from every single one of them. They kept telling me, don't come back here. Your money's no good. You got to get out of here. We're calling the cops. But when I came to AA, they kept telling me, keep coming back. You know? I experienced when I came in for the first time in 2006. I thought I was beat down. But, you know, I had a lot of issues with the God thing. You know, when I came into AA, you know, and I saw that on the third step, I said, whoa, I'm not ready for all of that. You know, I had resented God ever since my childhood for taking away my grandmother. So I didn't want any part of it. And I thought AA was a cult. At that same time, my dad, he did a lot of drinking throughout his years. And I've watched him drink alcoholically, and I've watched him get sober through AA. For the grace of God, he's coming up on 18 years through working the program and sponsoring others and fellowship and that kind of stuff. And that's been an amazing process. But, you know, it took a long time for me to admit that I was an alcoholic. You know, it was a devastating blow to my ego. Because I used to think, like, how can this liquid substance control my entire life? So I tried different methods, you know. I would stay away from the hard stuff and drink beer only, you know. Or I would just try to stop and you know, I pretty much white-knuckled, you know, the whole time. I was experiencing that restless, irritable, and discontented, like talks about in the doctor's opinion. And I just could not wait to get another drink. You know, the obsession was there, and it was kicking my butt. Now we're checking treatment centers and stuff, and I'd graduate, and I had that false sense of accomplishment, and I would go get drunk the very next day, or maybe even the same day. But things got really worse when I started experiencing blackouts. That was scary, because I was waking up in jail, detoxes, and in really weird places. So to me that was scary. I remember one time I was drinking at my house and I came to in another state. And up to this day I still don't know how that happened. I lived in New York City, Queens, and I wound up in New Jersey somewhere in some hospital called St. Mary's. And I asked the nurses, I was like, how did I get here? And they're like, I don't know, we just found you laying on the street. And I was like, wow. To me that was an eye-opener, and you know, I just felt the need to get help. You know, I had a desire, but, you know, I was not willing to go to any lengths. But, you know, to me, I had to go through that experience in order for me to get where I'm at now. When I checked into a detox, a couple of guys from Alcoholics Anonymous went there and carried the message. Something clicked, you know, and one of the guys said he had drank for the effect. And I said, yeah, I drink for the effect. I like how it makes me feel. You know, alcohol was doing for me what I could not do for myself at the time. You know, I felt insecure. It made me feel secure. When I was fearful, it made me, you know, prideful. You know, when I was experiencing difficulties with, you know, finances, you know, it would just disappear. I'd take a drink of alcohol and it was gone, you know. I feared people. But I talked to everybody when I was drinking. You know, and that worked for a little while, you know, until I started experiencing some real consequences. So after I left that detox and went to my very first Alcoholics Anonymous meeting, that group is called the Woodside Group in Sunnyside, Queens. You know, when I walked in, it was a room full of old people, and I said, oh, God, look at this mess, you know, and everybody looked like Santa Claus, and I was like, yeah, I can't relate to these guys, but I did see miracles in that room, because there was a bunch of guys that used to sleep under the bridge that I knew when I was growing up in that neighborhood, that they would, you know, pretty much come out during the daytime and panhandle, and, you know, they were filthy, and, you know, and they smelled like piss, and I seen them in the rooms, clean cut, wearing nice clothes. And I said, wow, I remember that guy, you know. Look at him now. Matter of fact, I was seeing a picture of him yesterday. One of the guys that I'd seen in my first meeting, he was wearing a tuxedo. And, you know, I think up to this point right now, he might have like 11 years. A real miracle. I stuck around for 30 days, and the ego had returned, and I had that false sense of, like, I got this. I can do this on my own, you know. And, sure enough, I picked up a 30-day chip and got drunk that very same day, you know, and I experienced some more consequences legal consequences. That's when I started landing in jail. One time I came to in was 114th Precinct in Corona, Queens. My T-shirt was completely covered in blood, but I didn't have a scratch on me. And I was scared to death. I said, oh, man, I killed somebody. You know, and evidently I'd gotten into a fight, and, you know, the guy rubbed up on me. But I was released from jail, and, you know, I was like, man, I got to stop, you know, and checked into another treatment center way up in upstate New York. It was like at the border of Canada, and it was freezing cold, and we had a couple of Franciscan friars that were members of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they would carry the message to us, and that was pretty cool. One of the guys there, he had like 30 semi years, and he was hilarious, and I was able to relate to him. I graduated that program, and when I got off the train, you know, I was scared to death because there it was, all those pubs and liquor stores and all the, you know, all the neon signs, and I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? So for the first few weeks, I started going a long way. I went to a meeting. It was called Camilla Falter. It means a thousand welcomes in Gaelic. There I met a gentleman. His name's Adrian Clark. He was my first sponsor. Very good sponsor. I walked up to him and I told him that I needed help. He asked me one simple question, and I didn't really know what he meant, but I do now today. He said, are you willing to go to any lengths of victory over alcohol? And he had a very thick brogue. He had about 5 years at the time. He had just came in from Ireland. But I wanted what he had, and I said yes. And so he illustrated this book to me. So the first thing I want you to do, you're going to meet me tomorrow. I forgot what time it was. And it was a big book study. He's like, I want you to make the coffee. And I said, all right. So, you know, that became my home group for a good while. And that was called Way Out. Every Saturday I made the coffee for, I think, like 90 days. And that was good. I needed to get involved because I was very sick, you know, and I always felt less than, and I felt different. And when I was preparing the coffee and all that stuff, I felt like a part of. And that was important to me, you know. And so one of the first things we started doing was going through the book. And thank God he was very thorough with the book, and perhaps he was one of the best teachers I've ever had. And so we started going through the, you know, the forwards and stuff, and he started explaining a lot of things to me, and then we got to the doctor's opinion. And that's when a lot of things started sinking in. And I'm grateful that it's in the book, because to me it was the experience that I had felt. I felt like nobody else had ever experienced. But I've said there are men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it is injurious, they cannot after time differentiate the truth from the false. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. They are restless, irritable, and discontented unless they can again experience the sense of ease and comfort which comes at once by taking a few drinks. Drinks they see others taking with impunity. In fact, if they have succumbed to desire again, as so many do, the phenomenon of craving develops. They pass through well-known stages of spree, emerging remorseful with the firm resolution not to drink again. This is repeated over and over. Unless this person can experience an entire psychic change, there is very little hope for his recovery. And that made a lot of sense to me. You know, every time I took a drink, I would say to myself, I'm just going to have a couple. You know, I'd go out with my friends on Friday, and, you know, I just got paid, and we'd sit at the pub, you know, and I'd be like, hey, let me get a couple of Guinnesses, and that's it. I'm going home. Never worked out that way for me. You know, once I had that first drink, I needed another one, and another one, and another one. And I kept saying to myself, this is it. This is the last one. I'm going home. And that didn't happen, and it was closing time, and I had to be at work at like 8 in the morning, and it was already 5. So needless to say, if I did show up to work, I was pretty bombed. But there was a good chance that I was not going to show up. So I lost a lot of jobs that way. And I, you know, wake up the next day from that prestigious vendor, and I would say to myself, I ain't doing that again. You know, I'm just kidding. I'm not drinking. You know. And sure enough, I was drunk by the end of the day. you know, and this was repeated over and over, you know, and, you know, I took some more licks, and to me it was devastating, you know, I was just crushed that this thing had just mastered me, you know, it was my master, and there was no way out. I thought I was going to die an alcoholic, you know, a practicing alcoholic. But when we read that in the book, it gave me, you know, I was able to identify, you know, and I started becoming convinced, and that was an experience for me. So I'm grateful that man has sat down with me once a week and read the book to me, because when I first met him, I couldn't even read. My hands were shaking. I was going through withdrawals really bad, and he read it to me, and all I did was just underline, you know, and the more we went in the book, the more I underlined, the more I highlighted, and he said, "Wow, Gus, it looks like you're screwed." And I was like, "What?" And I was just being formal. He said something else, but I'm not going to say it here. But he told me, "You might be an alcoholic." And I said, "Yeah, I definitely am." He's like, "Well, some more work to be done." And, you know, and the more we got in the book, the more I started becoming convinced. And, you know, I found a lot of identification in Bill's story. You know, that was huge. I was also in the military for a good while. And, you know, at one point I did work for Merrill Lynch in New York. And so I became a military stockbroker. Yeah, and, you know, it sounds about right. And I drank like him and had the experiences he went through. And I said, "Oh, my God, this is rough," you know. And but I got to chapter 3 in the book, and that was huge. I mean, and I always read this one every time I do H&I in my district, you know, and it packs a powerful punch, because to me this was everything I had experienced, you know, in a nutshell. It says, "Most of us have been unwilling to admit we were real alcoholics. No one likes to think his body is mentally different from his fellows. Therefore, it is not surprising that our drinking careers have been characterized by countless vain attempts that we can prove to drink like other people." You know, I try to prove that I can drink like other people every time I drank. You know, but it just did not work out that way. And the idea that somehow, someday he can control and enjoy his drinking is the great obsession of every abnormal drinker. I lost my spot. The persistence of this illusion is astonishing. Many pursue it to the gates of insanity or death. And I got near death before, too. One of the consequences of my drinking, coming out of a bar, I got into a fight and got stabbed 9 times. I walked 3 blocks with a knife stuck in my back. And something was definitely out there, you know, protecting me, because I should have been dead. When I got to the hospital, I pulled a knife out from my back, and a lot of blood came flying out. And the doctor told me that if I hadn't been drunk, I would have died. You know, plus the adrenaline kept me alive as well, too. But I really, you know, it was the grace of God. And I can see that today. We had learned that we had to fully concede in our innermost selves that we were alcoholics. This is the first step in recovery. The delusion that we are like other people, or present we may be, has to be smashed. The alcoholics and men and women who have lost the ability to control our drinking, we know that no real alcoholic ever recovers control. All of us have felt at times that we were regaining control, but such intervals usually brief or inevitably followed by still less control, which led in time to pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. I know exactly what the book is talking about right there. You know, the shame, the guilt, the pain. You know, to me, that was waking up the next day and getting those phone calls like, "You know what you did last night?" And I was like, I don't want to remember, you know. And there was definitely a lot of embarrassing moments, you know. And, you know, that was, at that time, you know, I was really ashamed, and I would just continue on drinking, trying to forget about it. You know, alcohol, you know, it pretty much ran my life for 17 years and nearly killed me. And I'll tell you, this, the experience of working steps and getting involved in fellowship has saved my life. You know, gave me a way out. You know, to me it was before, you know, I thought it was a how to stop drinking program. but I've come to realize that it's not just that, it's how to live without alcohol program, you know. And then, you know, and working the steps and helping others and trusting God, you know, I got my life back and it's pretty good today. You know? So I'm going to keep on reading a little bit more and I'll get a little bit deeper into the steps. I feel like men who have lost their legs and never grow new ones. Neither does there appear to be any kind of treatment that will make alcoholics of our kind like other men. We have tried every imaginable remedy. In some instances, there has been brief recovery, followed always by still worse relapse. Physicians who are familiar with alcoholism agree there are no such thing as making a normal drink out of an alcoholic. Science may one day accomplish this, but has not done so yet. Despite all we can say, many who are real alcoholics are not going to believe that they are in that class. By every form of self-deception and experimentation, they will try to prove themselves exception to the rule, therefore non-alcoholic. If anyone showing the inability to control his drinking can do the right about face and drink like a gentleman, our hats are off to him. Heaven knows we have tried hard enough and long enough to drink like other people. And I've got this all underlined because I've tried every single experiment and came up empty-handed. Or it says, here are some of the methods we have tried. Drinking only, beer only, limiting the number of drinks, never drinking alone, never drinking in the morning, drinking only at home, never having it in the house, never drinking during business hours, drinking only at parties, switching from scotch to brandy, drinking only natural wines and beans, to resign if ever drunk on the job, taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing off forever with or without a solemn oath, taking more physical exercise, reading inspirational books, going to health farms and sanitariums, accepting voluntary commitment to ourselves. We can increase the list to ad infinitum. You know, I've done it all, you know, and then some, and, you know, that experience, you know, was crazy because I was not willing to admit. I was dishonest with myself, you know, for a long time about my drinking. You know, and I'll tell you that, you know, I had to be beaten to the state of reasonableness where I was finally able to surrender. And that was the first step. November 19th, move along. November 19th, I was staying in a halfway house and back in a year, sober living in America. And I decided to go out and take a drink. That drink took me, and next thing I know, there was blue lights and handcuffs. When I came to, I was being charged with DUI, felony obstruction, and you know, and some other add-ons. And I said, oh my God, this is terrible. You know, I was facing some real jail time over that obstruction, which at the time I thought, you know, was an injustice. But, you know, that all got taken care of. While I was sitting in that jail cell, you know, I finally got on my knees and I asked God for help. You know, and I needed to do that. I couldn't do this without him, without his aid. I prayed. I was in DeKalb County Jail for 4 months. I prayed every morning, and I asked him, and I thanked him at night. And I prayed for something to happen, and they brought in a guy from the other fellowship. And we talked about recovery. And he had relapsed, and he had a little weekend sentence, but I gave him a note, and I said, whenever you go to an AA meeting, please give this to the chairperson. And I was asking for literature. So one day it came, you know, and there was this book. It still got the little stickers from the sheriff's department. And the officer had walked in with this book, and I knew what book it was. You know, it's the only book that doesn't have any gold letters on it, so I knew it wasn't a Bible. But I knew it was the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and he called my name. I ran up to him, yanked it out of his hand. I was out during rotation, which was like a lockdown facility. They only let us out, you know, for a couple hours a day, and a couple hours in the morning and a couple hours at night. But I told him to pop my door, I'm going in, and I started reading the book again. I had an experience in there, you know, where it talks about the doctor's opinion was a psychic change. and it all clicked all at once, and I was just like, oh my God. And I remembered everything that I had done wrong when I first came in 2006. Try to hold on to old ideas, and the result was nil, like it says in How It Works. I was still holding on to a lot of stuff that was making me sick. Part of it was a really destructive marriage that I was in. That one nearly killed me. You know, I was very codependent, and you know, that she had became my higher power. But I knew for a long time that this was not going to work. You know, for the grace of God, she never showed up to the jail to visit or anything, and that broke my back, but it made me willing. As I started reading the book again, I prayed also for a roommate, because I was in there locked down by myself, you know, pretty much along with a killer. And sure enough, he came. It was an older gentleman, was about 50-something years old, alcoholic, never been to AA. And I said, wow, you know, God answered my prayers. First one was a book, now an alcoholic. We started going through 164 pages of this book, and he had an experience. He said, wow, I never knew there was a way out. You know, and he cried, and we both cried in a jail cell. You know, it's like, it's crazy. It's like, what the hell? But he was real grateful to know that there is a solution. And later, I found out he was sent down to prison, but he's in the treatment down there. I think it's what is that? ASAP, something like that. RSAP, yeah. And so he's looking for help, and I was able to plant the seed, you know, and that was an experience, and I was released from that county and sent over to Clark County, where I'm from, Athens. That's where I currently live. My sponsor at the time, he carries a message to jails and prisons. And I've known him for quite a while, and I asked him to sponsor me when I got out. That as soon as I got out, I was going to give him a call. I called him from the booking office when I was getting released. I was like, man, I'm being released now. I'm going to happy hour. And sure enough, he was there, you know, and we got down to the book right away again. So, and that was a beautiful experience because he does a lot of service work, and I do a lot of things that he does. You know, he does beginners meetings on Monday at 5:30 religiously. He also works in a recovery home, and he runs the men's division in that. He's constantly taking newcomers to meetings and sponsoring them and carrying the message to detoxes as well. And, you know, I got involved in that as well, except I'm not allowed to go to the jail yet, but one day hopefully I'll have that experience. But I got involved in detox, and I've been doing that for about 9 months and a half now. Every Tuesday, we go down, a couple of us carry the message that's still suffering alcoholics that are trying to find a way out. I also got involved in communications in Athens. I, you know, got thrown in there because a friend of mine, Tim knows, he told me, he's like, man, you just need to get involved with service or you won't get drunk no more. So he got me involved in the AA hotline, and that's been an amazing experience. True blessing, you know, just talking to somebody on the phone and then meeting up with them in person and watching them grow. It's really a beautiful thing. Also, through the grace of God, I've been getting involved in drug court as well. So, needless to say, I get involved with the service. To me, it's I have to practice on a constant basis these principles in all my affairs. Because I've also learned through my old sponsorship family that I have a three-part disease. I need a three-part solution. You know, I suffer from the physical allergy. Once I take a drink, I don't stop until something happens. And then the mental obsession, the phenomenon of craving, where my brain's telling me I need to get one more. Or when I get that paycheck and I cash it in right away to the liquor store. It's almost like automatic, you know, and the spiritual malady. You know, so I'm affected mind, body, and spirit. So what I've been putting in practice is working all three sides of the triangle. You know, for a lot of you guys that don't know, that's our logo, and it's up there. Unity, service, recovery. Huge aspect, and we got the circle that is the wholeness. I was told to bring the body and the mind will follow. big important piece. I come to do the to fellowship, and that's unity. You know, I share my experience, or I listen and, you know, try to find a newcomer to work with, you know, so I get to work that side. You know, I work the, I do the service part, you know, which treats the spirit, you know, and that's been an amazing experience, you know, and but foremost, I won't be able to do any of that if I'm not working the 12 steps. You know, like, that's what holds that two other sides. You know, it's there for a reason. In working the steps, I found freedom, not only from the alcohol, but freedom for myself. Because later on in the book, the book tells me I'm selfish and self-centered. You know, that's the root of all my troubles. So what I have to do the opposite of what I normally would do. And every time I get caught up in self, I need to go help somebody. You know, I have a good friend who's sitting in the room, came with me from Athens, and he used to say this crazy thing, and I loved it, and he said, "More God, less me." And that really struck me because it's true. Every time I'm carrying on God's will, I'm not caught up in my will, and I'm not going back to those old ideas, so long as I stay grounded and connected. Important piece, and I'll, you know, you said that a long time ago, and it's stuck with me to this day. It's like tattooed in my brain. But the wholeness of this, you know, it feels good that I can go to any state, any city, and AA will be there. You know, I make a lot of trips here to Atlanta, and while I'm here, I go to various groups, and you know, I know people here. I have a wide network. And that's an important piece, because if I'm left to my own devices, I'll start thinking, oh, nobody knows me here, or maybe I can just sneak a couple, you know. But that obsession has been removed, so I don't think like that. You know, my first thing is, before I even leave Athens, I'm making phone calls and letting people know I'm on my way to Atlanta. You know, and I also brought some friends here, and I'm grateful they're here, because I... So they catch me on the line if I changed my story last time, you know. And, But I'll tell you the experience that I've been living, you know, the past year and almost about 13 months, it's been miraculous. You know, I've reestablished myself with God. I trust Him utterly. Like, the book, the whole thing, there was a huge mystery behind this book, and it was shortly revealed not too long ago. During that conversation, when I bumped into a gentleman over at the Big Book Study at the Biscayne, and I spoke to Tinsley, and you know, and that's how, you know, Tim found out I was around. Then Tim showed up at one of the meetings in Athens. I guess he must have got my phone number from Randy Parsons, who's a good friend of mine. And we got a hold of each other, and I said, yeah, a huge miracle happened while I was in DeKalb County Jail. Somebody sent me a big book, and he said, oh, you got it? Good. It was him the whole time. I was a whole year trying to figure out who got sent it. You know, and that letter did get through, so that was, you know, I'm real grateful for that gentleman that did that. And you know, hopefully I'll see him one day in a meeting and thank him personally. For you guys don't know, Tim Ridgway was my sponsor where I lived here in Atlanta. He worked with me for about 6 months, and I did my fifth step one day. I was standing in the corner over there with him and did my fifth step. Feeling pretty good, and got in the truck, started driving down the road, and blue lights popped up, and I was like, oh boy. You know, I had not been told, to be honest, and I had left out the fact that I have a work permit at the time, and yeah, the cop was like, yeah, you can't drive home. He saw me come out of here, pulled me over, and, you know, Frank had come down there, and it was really embarrassing. And one of the things that Tim had said, he's like, oh, you left something out of your fifth step, huh? Sure enough, I did, you know. And so that was a funny experience as well, too. But one of the greatest things I've been able to participate in, and that was a beautiful experience, is the Atlanta Men's Workshop. Wow, that's all I can say. If you tell me 10 years ago that I'd be spending a weekend with a bunch of dudes in the woods, I'd be like, you're crazy as hell. There's no way. The Atlanta Men's Workshop was, I've gone to two rocks, and what it basically is, it's a step workshops and stuff. They have meetings, and it's a bunch of men. We all meet up at the Rock Eagle in Putnam County, and it's absolutely amazing. And last year I had the opportunity to get involved in the cook crew, and that was beautiful. I mean, we fellowshipped, and we got to do a lot of service work, and that was beautiful, you know. And for any of you guys that have never been, please go. You'll be depriving yourselves from an experience. So those are the few things that those are one of the many things I have to do to break out of self. You know, I have to do things that make me feel uncomfortable. I've worked alongside with my sponsor, and we sit down and go through the book, and every time I'll reread it, something jumps out at me. You know, and somewhere down at UNDO, after I'd done my fifth step, I started seeing the patterns. You know, we got down to causes and conditions, the things that kept me sick, things that kept me drunk, because the alcohol was just a symptom, and I just thought, hey, if I stop drinking, everything's going to be all right. But it wasn't, it was crazy as hell, so I needed to really look at the root of the trouble. Once I seen the pattern of selfishness, dishonesty, being inconsiderate, and constantly afraid, that had changed. I had to ask God to remove them from me. And that's a difficult task at times, because, there's always that longest journey for the alcoholic, which is about 10 to 12 inches, from the head to the heart. So sometimes I have to check my motives on things that I do. Because I'm either feeding the spirit or I'm feeding the beast. And I got to really look at that, because I'm just that sick. But I've been getting better. So asking God to remove this stuff from me and carrying out His will instead of mine, something has happened. All the stuff that I normally would do, I don't do. I've developed this group, this God conscience. It's like when I do something wrong, it's like I know I did something wrong. Before, I just did not care, but now it's like, all right, I gotta look at my part and I gotta make an amends, or I gotta do something, because this is not sitting well with me. So I'll pray about it, call my sponsor, and if there's a direct amends I have to make, I do it immediately. And normally I wouldn't. I'd be like, I ain't doing that. I'm not gonna tell somebody I've done wrong. I'm perfect, but that's the ego, and then continuing to develop and strengthen and broaden my relationship with God, by prayer and meditation has been absolutely a miracle. I mean, I had a miracle happen today. It was, for us that's an understatement. But I pretty much came out here on faith alone. I didn't have a whole lot of money. This is the off season for painters, so I've been having to watch everything that I spend. And I said, well, I got to take care of some stuff in Atlanta. I only had a few bucks, and I said, well, I'm just going to go on faith. There was a painting company that I had worked for in Athens, and they called me up 5 minutes prior to me saying that. And called me up, hey, I need your help with something. I was like, what's going on? And he said, you have this job in Atlanta. And I was like, oh, cool, I'm going to be in Atlanta. And he told me what it was, and it's like literally like right down the road. He said, well, once we're done with it, I'll pay you. And I was like, wow. So, that relationship with God and Him doing for me what I could not do for myself has been an experience, It's there's too much evidence for me to even consider that it was coincidence, And I'm the type of alcoholic that needs facts. I'm not easily convinced because my ego gets in the way. But it's just too much evidence for me to even discredit it. And I can see that today. And I help. I work with others. Matter of fact, I have one guy here in this room today that we just got started in the book, and that's an important piece. I must give away what was freely given to me. I don't work a selfish program. That was the root of the trouble. So I must carry out it. The message of Alcoholics Anonymous to still sick and suffering. And to me, that's a blessing. Nothing that I've done is God's been gracing me to do this stuff. You know, so to me, it's just, you know, continue working the steps, helping others, trusting God, and continue trudging along, because for a long time I thought this was a destination, but it's not. It's a journey. And sometimes there's things that are going to happen in my life, and, you know, and I got to continue on trudging, because alcohol is not going to solve that problem. You know, but a simple reliance upon the spirit of the universe, you know, will. And I have faith in that. You know, so once again, I want to thank Tim for letting me tell my story here tonight. And I also want to thank the group here for showing up and my friends that came along to support me. That's all I got, and I want to thank you for letting me share.
Thank you so much. Thank you for bringing the solution.
Love has got the power. There's nothing more.